This is Barry Dunlop at IncomeDiary.com. Michael's not online this evening, actually, but I am, and I have a very, very special guest this evening. It's Sean C. Stevenson. Now, you're going to hear a lot more about Sean, both from me and from Michael and right across the world, because Sean is one of the most remarkable human beings I've ever met in my life. I was very fortunate recently. I happened to go to Necker Island. That's Sir Richard Branson's private island. And I got to meet Sean for the first time, and Sean just blew me away. I can't really explain it, because the reason I can't explain it is because there was something about Sean that I'd never witnessed before, and I would only use the word energy. I don't want to sound too mumbo-bumbo or anything like that, but it was energy. I completely went for his energy straight away, and within moments, Sean was giving me his book, signed, autographed, Get Off Your Butt. That's B-U-T, not B-U-T-T, Get Off Your Butt. It's got an amazing foreword by Anthony Tony Robbins, we would call him here in the UK, but it says Anthony Robbins here in front of the book. And it's How to End Self-Sabotage and Stand Up for Yourself. Everywhere I look about you, Sean, you seem to be, you know, known by the rich and famous everywhere. I see that President Clinton is said lovely things about you. And I just look around the whole place and I think to myself, who does this guy not know? But what I would like you to do, if you can, because I have the benefit this evening of being able to watch you on video, just introduce yourself, who you are. Tell us just the shortened version of the life of Sean.
Well, Barry, thank you for having me on the program. I was born with a magical life. When I was born, I came into the world with a condition called osteogenesis imperfecta, also translates into brittle bones disorder. So when I came out, practically every bone in my body was crushed from just the process of birth. And they were pretty certain that I was going to die within the first 24 hours of my life.
Wow.
And so my parents were told to grieve on the day that they were supposed to be celebrating. They were told to grieve for one of two things: either the loss of their baby or the loss of a normal baby, because they weren't going to have a normal baby. They told them at birth that I had a rare condition that if I even got to live, that my bones would fracture from little or no apparent reason, and I would be stunted in growth and be of short stature my entire life if I even got to live. So that's a lot to put on a human being, especially when they're supposed to be celebrating. And so my parents made a decision at a very critical period of their life that this condition was not going to consume my life, it was not going to take me out of this world, and that if there was anything they could do to expose me to the world in a positive, uplifting, healing manner, they would, and they have.
Wow.
And my parents have an amazing marriage. They have been the best role models that a human being could ever ask for. And they are some of my closest friends, as well as being my parental figures. They raised me and my sister, who does not have my condition, she's 2 years older than me. They raised us with the mentality that anything was possible. And so I went on to live a great childhood amidst all the physical pain, and I incurred a lot. In my first 18 years of my life, Barry, I'd fractured my bones over 200 times.
200 so, times.
Something as simple as sneezing would fracture a rib or a collarbone. And if you can imagine, you know, most people get one broken bone in their whole life, if at all. And, you know, it hurt just as much for me as it would for you, except I had experienced it on repeat occasions. And I also had numerous surgeries to try to straighten my legs, and all the surgeries failed because my body rejected the procedures. And, you know, I spent my whole life using a wheelchair for mobility. Some people say I've been confined to a wheelchair. I disagree. I think I've been given freedom by my wheelchair. And I'm only about 3 feet tall because it causes the bones to be extremely stunted in growth. So here I am, 3 feet tall, just turned 30 years old, so the doctor's prediction was certainly wrong, thank God. And I use a wheelchair to get around, and I have assistants that help me get in and out of vehicles and help me with everyday ordinary things like showering, toileting, all of those things I can do, but I need help to do. All the organs in my body are of normal size and normal operation. I can have children. I have feeling in all my body, and I live a great life. In fact, I often say I live the life of a rock star because I've traveled the world. I've been to practically every state here in the U.S. I've been in, going on, I think about 8 countries that I've been to, and I'm picking up 3 more this month. And I am somebody who has made the most of his time. I've become an author 4 times over. I've written 4 books. I've filmed a fitness video with Miss Fitness Universe, and I can't lie, I liked that one. And I've got an amazing social life with a group of friends called the Chanterage, and I didn't come out with that arrogantly. That was a an individual who dubbed the name of those that hang out with me as the Chanterage. And so now my life, I'm a board-certified therapist here in the States. We can talk about how I handle that. I have a speaking career that I'm going on 13 years now, traveling the world, speaking to companies and schools about this concept of ending self-sabotage. And I have an amazing dating life, and you know, I go to bed every night wishing I didn't have to, because my life is more exciting than my dreams.
Wow. Well, there is so much you've said there, Sean, that I'd have to think to myself. I mean, the one thing that I found most remarkable about you, in fact, actually, it's in your book. It says, watch out what you say to yourself. Now, I've been listening to you there, and you've said things which really you wouldn't expect somebody in what most people would consider your condition or your situation to be saying, things like this. Like you said, used the word right in the beginning, magical life. You know, that wouldn't have been a word that most people would have used. And you've used words like, you know, the freedom that you've, you know, from your wheelchair. You clearly look at things almost, can I dare to suggest this, the opposite to just about most people. So, I mean, what made the change? When did the change happen? When did you suddenly decide to look at things differently? Or were you, I mean, I don't believe you were, but were you born that way? You just were a positive individual to start with? I can't believe you did. I mean, there must have been some learned behavior, something that came along that made a difference.
Well, it's a hybrid, really. It's probably the number one question I get on this planet is, have I always been this way, personality-wise, attitude-wise? And it's a hybrid answer because it's, you know, when you're raised in a environment that is just so positive and loving, that has a great impact on you. And I had that to start. And I know that's not something everybody gets, so I was fortunate. So a good part of my attitude, we can't discount, came built in because of my parents and my sister and my extended family raising me. So that's at least 50% of the equation. The other 50% was I had to pick up the ball and run with it, right? I had to make something of the life that I had, because I could have had a great support system and still not done anything with my life. And there were pivotal moments in my life. I talk about in the first chapter when I was in fourth grade, my favorite day of the year. I don't know if it's this way over in the UK, but Halloween is really popular amongst kids here.
It's popular here too, Sean.
Yeah, so kids dress up, and there was only one thing I really wanted in life more than anything as a child, was to be able to blend in and be normal and just like everybody else, which is the opposite of what most kids want. They want to stand out and be different. So there was one day of the year that I got to do that, and that was Halloween, because all the kids got dressed up and nobody stared at me. So I loved Halloween, and I was in my costume, and I was rolling around in my living room, and I caught my left leg on the corner of the door. I bent it back, and I snapped it at the femur bone, the large thigh bone. And I knew I had 4 to 6 weeks to heal. I wouldn't be able to go to the school and show my costume off and eat the candy and be with my friends and be at the parties and trick-or-treat and do all those fun things I look forward to every year. And I was so angry, I started screaming out, why me? What did I ever do to deserve this? And my mom came running in the room, and she knelt down beside me, Barry, and she ran her fingers through my hair to calm me down. We would play this little game whenever I would break a bone, Barry. It was, what was your favorite part about our last vacation?
Mm-hmm.
Except that day I was so angry I didn't want to play any more games. And my mom saw that in my eyes. And so she formulated a question, Barry, that changed the course of my life. She said, Sean, is this going to be a gift or a burden in your life?
Wow. That's an amazing question.
And before I could tell her she was crazy, something magical happened. Something mystical, something that I can't explain with science. It was like this warm wind of wisdom just surrounded my body, and I got clarity in fourth grade, the purpose to my life. The purpose to my life that I realized so young, at the tender age of 10 years old or 11, whatever you are when you're in fourth grade, that everybody goes through pain. Everybody fractures, just not with their bones. And I seem to love my life amidst the fractures. And God put me in this package to be fragile on the inside to help. They're fragile on the outside with the skeletal system, so I could help those that were fragile on the inside in their spirit. And that my purpose was to teach others how to love their life amidst their pain.
That's amazing, Sean. You know, I've obviously had the pleasure of meeting you in person, it's very moving to listen to you because so many of us complain and moan about things that really are not that big a deal. What you inspire, I mean, certainly, and I mean, I'm a pretty experienced guy and I think I've done a lot of work on myself, but you inspire an entirely different level, Sean, that, you are a gift, I believe, to the world today. People who are listening to this, I mean, I cannot over recommend the power that will be delivered by your book, Get Off Your Butt. It really is an exceptional book. Actually, I'll say this about it, because I'm not a tremendous reader these days. I do most of my reading online. It is one of the easiest books to read as well. It's great. I personally think it's possibly, it should become that one of the greatest self-help books ever in history. I don't know whether that was one of your intentions or even if you use the word self-help, but to me, it is that powerful. So people who are listening to this podcast or reading the transcript, I really would not be possible to over-exaggerate just how great this book is. It is that wonderful and that great. What I'm going to do, Sean, is because it's one of those books also for guys like me who don't necessarily be start at the beginning and go right way through to the end, but sometimes like to pick up a book and just get a bit of inspiration. And every time I do that, I get inspiration. I love, like, lesson 4, for instance, which is a great example, is focus your focus. And great statement. Happiness is right in front of you. Come on, explain that to the rest of us, Sean, please.
Sure. Well, the experience of life is not dictated by what happens. It's dictated by your interpretation of what happens.
Wow.
And this is why, you know, guys like Viktor Frankl, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning, who was, you know, tortured in the Nazi concentration camps, could still find love in the guards that were hurting him and survive because he realized that they know not what they did. You know, it's the individuals like Nelson Mandela that are locked up by his own people and you know, held against his own will and then is released and holds no animosity. It's people like Mother Teresa who live in complete impoverished nation and yet create a movement for us to help those that are less fortunate. I mean, any one of those individuals, Martin Luther King, you know, I mean, people who really we think of as going down in history of almost being iconic and mythical, like they're almost not real, those individuals had to have different interpretations than the mass populace. And I do too, because I hope to go down in history as being the human being who gave the cure to insecurity, that rid the world, that vaccinated the world of insecurity. And I know it's possible, Barry, and it will not make everybody comfortable, because if you wipe insecurity off the planet, you also upset a lot of industries.
Yes.
You know, they'll have to change their marketing methods, because, you know, I don't even claim to say that you need my book to feel good. I claim to say my book will be an instrument to help you find what you want in this life, but it's not the only thing you're going to need. It's just a tool. And whenever somebody comes along and says that a product, whether it's a makeup company or a car company or a clothing line, says that they have the answer to happiness, they're bold-faced lying to you. Happiness is an interpretation, the optimistic interpretation of that which happens to you.
Can you repeat that again? That's so good. That's so profound, Sean.
It's the optimistic interpretation of that which happens to you.
Thank you.
You know, when we have events take place, our ego likes to label them as good and bad really quickly, put them in boxes. And it's so not the best way to live. The way to live is to believe that everything is good. The way to live is to believe that everything is a tool and that nothing is a weapon. You know, I believe that bad, I'm not delusional. I believe that, you know, evil does exist. I do believe that people do hurt others. However, I also believe from my training and my intuitive nature that the hurt hurt and the healed heal.
Yes.
That the only reason why another human being would hurt you is because they themselves are hurt.
Yes.
And this is why I get into negative relationship loops in business and dating and family, and, you know, we keep repeating patterns, because as long as you're hurt, you're like a cactus. Anybody that tries to touch you is going to hurt themselves. But as long as you're healed, you're like a glowing stone of miraculous proportion, that when they reach out for you, they can't help but be healed.
This is really great stuff. A lot of people who come to our websites are looking for inspiration, if you like, and methods and ways to make more money. But increasingly, I find a lot of people they find all of those things, but actually they're also looking for that, you know, that happiness, if you like. And a lot of the happiness doesn't come from money. Most people already know that. But just hearing your interpretation, Sean, it's inspiring, you know, and I keep coming back to the book, you know, I love this one in particular. Again, it's only compare leads to despair. That is, I mean, most of us go through life making these unnecessary comparisons, and you just come right out and say it. Compare leads to despair. I mean, want to elaborate just a little bit on that, Sean?
I would. Anytime you compare yourself to others, you will end up miserable, and here's why. If you compare as if you have more, then you will feel disconnected from those around you, and you will create moments of envy from those around you. You will automatically, you will build a superiority complex, and as we've seen in history, no one stays on top forever. And why would you want to be on a pedestal, first of all? You are far more vulnerable on a pedestal than you are laying down. And I say that not just from a humility standpoint of, you know, try to act humble, but it's also, anytime you act better than somebody, you're delusional. You're not. You may know more, you may have more, but what you have could be taken away tomorrow, and what you know may be obsolete, or become obsolete. So, you are no greater than any other human being. And it causes pain for yourself and others to think that you are. Now, on the flip side, it's a lot more easy to understand this one. It's a lot of pain to think you're less than anyone else. Because then you have the inferiority complex. That you don't have enough, you're not smart enough, tall enough, pretty enough, wealthy enough, cool enough. You know, all of the enoughs, right? The but insecurities. But I'm not. Anytime you think, but I'm not, dot, 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 you're comparing. Because you're using someone else as a benchmark.
Wow, I mean, I just keep coming back to the same subject because you know, if people listening to this are actually, you know, wondering what's happening, actually, I should explain. I'm actually watching Sean on video as he speaks to me, which is really quite exciting and quite good. The fortunate thing for Sean is he can't see me on video, but I want to tell you, Sean, you look awesome, my brother. You look absolutely amazing, and. You know what I said there now about you can pick the book up anywhere and you'll find inspiration? I mean, this is something actually which I actually happen to know was a fact already myself, but it's so reassuring and so good to see other people coming right out and saying it. One of the other great lines from the book is, fairness is an illusion. In fact, actually, I'll elaborate a little bit more. You say, fairness is an illusion. Fairness never existed and never will. No one in life gets more or less than anyone else. We just get different stuff. I mean, I understand that, Sean, but I know a lot of people don't. So come on, you know, let's help people with this, but it's not fair disease, as you refer to.
Okay. Well, I get that in the moment, the but it's not fair is so real to you. You know, and I give an example of the extremes, you know. Some people say, but it's not fair, I can't bring my chihuahua into this cafe, right? And then the other extreme is, but it's not fair, I have to go into a foster home because my parents were killed in a car accident. You know, those are both but it's not fairs, right? One is obviously more extreme than the other. It doesn't matter, though, where in the gradation you are. Fairness is an illusion means... One day I was going along, and it'll help you to understand how I came across this. And I just looked at life, and then I went to a card game. I like to play cards, and while I'm not much of a betting man, I like to play with my friends. And I started to think about how I was dealt a pair of twos. And in Texas Hold'em, it's called. It's a poker game here in the States. You can actually... go all in and pretty much bluff the whole table that you got a great hand and barely have anything, and everybody else folds that may have better cards than you. It's how congruent you are. And then I woke up and I was like, I woke up here in life and I went, oh my goodness. That it doesn't matter what hand you're dealt. It's do you stay in the game? Do you play your pair of twos when you get them? Or do you complain that you didn't get the full house? You know, or the royal flush? It really doesn't matter what cards you get, because I've seen people that are gorgeous, tons of money, and shoot themselves in the face and leave their family picking up the pieces, and, you know, from a suicide, and you think, what happened? So... It's not what cards you dealt. It's how you play and stay in the game.
Yes.
And yeah, I was dealt a hand where I'm 3 feet tall in a wheelchair. But you know what? I'm out there actually seeing that as an advantage over the rest of you. Because when I come into a room, I don't need to do anything obnoxious or outlandish or anything to get attention. I just show up. And so... that gives me an advantage.
I can vouch for that, Sean. You just show up.
When you start looking for the advantages to your condition, you really realize you weren't given less or more. You were given, I mean, that's what I say in the book. I talk about how no one was given less or more. They're just given different stuff. You know, if you're given a spoon and I'm given a fork, who got a better utensil? Well, it all depends, doesn't it? Because if I want to have cereal, yeah, you got the better utensil. But if I want to have a salad, I got a better utensil.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter what you were given, because I promise you, what you were given can be used to great lengths. You know, my family did a great job in raising my mom and dad taught me about adapting is one of the strongest tools that a human being has access to. And, you know, I learned because I was called disabled my whole life, and nothing could be further from the truth. Disabled in the root words is not able. Mm-hmm. Barry, read my resume alone and you know that's not true.
That's not true.
So I say this as humbly as I can. I am not disabled and I'm not delusional. I have a physical condition, but that doesn't box me in. And disabled means this. The only disability is one's refusal to adapt. Because if something happens to me and I adapt and you don't, who's getting out ahead?
Yes.
You know, and here in the States, I don't know what it's like over there, but we're having some tough economic times. And look at it this way. You got to adapt. You just got to adapt, and we will come out. You know, in the Great Depression, there were more millionaires made per capita than any time in the world.
Yes.
So, you know, I love my mentor who wrote the foreword. Tony says, you know, some people, some people are buried in an avalanche and others ski.
Yes.
It's just snow, though, you know? And I look at it as, you know, my parents taught me when I was really young, I wanted to play basketball, Barry. I don't know if that's big over there, but here we have the National Basketball Association, the NBA.
Yes.
And I wanted to be in the NBA, and I didn't understand why I couldn't try out for the school team when I was in grade school. And I didn't understand why I couldn't grow up and be like Shaquille O'Neal or Michael Jordan. And my dad sat me on his lap when I was crying one day, and he said, "Sean, you can be in the NBA. I promise you. You'll just have to adapt." And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" And he said, "While you may not be able to be on the court and play, you work hard enough, son, you can own a team."
Yes. The distinctions you're making here, Sean, and I'm sure everybody who's listening this and are reading this will be making the same distinction, are just amazing, amazing distinctions that we all can pick up. I mean, all our lives are being bettered so much because of this. I did want to say something to you because you mentioned a mentor there now, and this is a question I would love an answer to. You mentioned Tony Robbins, and he was obviously one of your mentors. Is there any mentors? I mean, your parents mentored you as well. I mean, is there any particular mentors that you like to mention or give note
sure,
of?
Sure, sure. Do you have the book in front of you or near you?
I do. It's right here.
So if you'll open up to the front page,
yes,
of the endorsements,
yes,
those are some of my closest mentors. So if you just want to read some of the names.
Yeah, well, you've got James Arthur Ray. I've actually met James once, so he's a really good guy. You've got Ray Dodd. You've got Gary Cox. I like the title of Gary's book, "Don't Let Others Rent Space in Your Head." I would buy the book just for the title. I don't know what it's about,
yep,
but it's
genius. He's a genius.
That's a great book. I mean, David D'Angelo, we know who David is. Eben Pagan. You know, you've obviously got Tony Robbins here. We mentioned earlier on President Clinton. Susan Jeffers as well, Ken Blanchard, Jimmy Kimmel. The list just goes on and on.
Out of all of them, the one that's probably been the most pivotal outside of Tony and President Clinton would be Eben Pagan, also writes by the name of David D'Angelo. He was a massive part of my life, both in personally and professionally. And for those that don't know, he's an online genius. He built up a company called Hot Topic Media. Hot Topic Media produces online brands that make millions of dollars here in the United States. And, you know, he has 80 employees, and they're all virtual. He has no headquarters. He's just a genius, and he's just a caring human being. And, you know, I reference him in the last chapter. It says one last thing.
Yes,
One more thing.
That's an awesome point you make in that one last thing. It's a one page as well. Why don't we tell people what it is? Because it is a very important distinction.
Sure. Do you want to find the one line that where he asked me the question and read that to them?
Indeed, yes. Eben says, Sean, when does a person learn something? And you thought about it. And you said, when they retain the information they set forth to absorb. And Eben said, wrong. Learning doesn't occur until a behavior has changed. As long as you know something intellectually, but you have not yet put it into practice, you haven't learned it at all. And actually, the reason it rings so many bells with me is because I can look at lots of things that I've learned intellectually, Sean, but I haven't learned them at all. And I know there's plenty more of us out there. So I love that.
I continue to say at the bottom of that page, common sense is not common sense until it's common practice.
Powerful. Very, very powerful. Sean,
my mentors have had tremendous impact on my life. You know, there's a whole chapter just about how you can't foster a good life without a great, what I call a pit crew.
Yeah. I know you keep referencing that quite a lot, the pit crew. I mean, one other point you make, actually, lesson five, which it's sort of relevant to what we're talking about, is choose your friends wisely. I mean, you know, sometimes your life changes, and maybe your friends have to change. I mean, sometimes people think it's possibly slightly arrogant to think that you have to change your friends. I mean, what's your view on it? So how do you explain that?
Well, I don't know here in my world if people see that as arrogant. I sometimes think people see it as cruel. Hmm. You know, it's like, that's evil to leave your friends, right? And I say, keep your friends around as long as they're having a positive impact on you. And, you know, it's one thing if your friend's going into a down slump and you help them out, but what if they slip in down slump and have never come out? You know, there's a movie called The Guardian or something here. It was with Kevin Costner and Ashton Kutcher. And, you know, they said, how do you know? There were Coast Guards in the movie. They said, how do you know when you're given split-second decision of who to save? And I just love the line, and they said, whoever swims to us.
Yes.
You can't help those that don't swim to you, who don't want to put effort in making something of their life and making something of a life with you, whether it's dating, friendship, or business. You know, you become like those you surround yourself with. I have a line that I get my clients to repeat on a regular basis. When you're in the environment, you become the environment. You know, I like playing around and what I mean by playing around is, you know, being silly, being goofy, partying, dancing. And I like that crazy side to life, but it's only about 5% of me. Mm. You know, 95% of me is very stable, driven, focused, and clear, and therefore my friends reflect that. If my friends were all that 5% of me, I would be getting nothing done, and my body would probably be in jeopardy, my sanity would be out the window. You know, if you surround yourself with just partiers, you know, you will not be productive in any sense of the word.
Again, an amazing distinction, Sean. I love that one. I love it.